new government regulations, which were created to protect employees, are actually hurting them.
It's regulation after regulation.
Until the government understands that they have to create an environment suitable for us to keep growing, we're going to stay in this recession a long time.
The federal government has blocked efforts to expand the ride-sharing.
The owners say the restaurant has succumbed to the crush of government regulation.
We have seen an unprecedented explosion of new regulatory activity.
$1.8 trillion. That's how much
business centers and bus companies to close.
I think there are outdated regulations that need to be changed. There is red tape that needs to be cut.
The regulations are...
There's a regulation that doesn't make any sense. Why do you keep...
Is this really the best we can do?
This is Free Lunch, the podcast of the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project. All expressions of opinion on this podcast are those of the speakers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Federalist Society Teleform conference call for the Regulatory Transparency Project. If you've not done so yet, I encourage you to visit our website at regproject.org. regproject.org, where you can subscribe to receive updates on all of the content we post, when it's posted, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. This call is all about the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, and FlightNow, Inc., a company National Law Journal dubbed the Uber of the Sky. My name is Devin Westhill. I'm the director of the RTP and the host of the Free Lunch Podcast. If you're new to the Federalist Society programs, you should know that the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy initiatives, and therefore, all expressions of opinion on this call and all Free Lunch podcasts are those of the featured speakers. Today, we're absolutely thrilled to have as our featured speakers Jonathan Riches and Alain Guichard. John is a director of national litigation for the Goldwater Institute Scharf Norton Center for Constitutional Litigation and general counsel for the Institute. John was the attorney of record for FlightNow's legal battle with the FAA, and we are pleased he now serves as an expert on the RTP's state and local working group. Alain, was a CFO and co-founder of FlightNow, Inc., a ride-sharing service for small planes. Alain is a lawyer and has worked for several years at Carbonite. Alain is currently living and working in Miami at another startup called CarHopper. More about John and Alain can be found on our website at regproject.org. Okay, I'm going to first turn it over to Alain to get us started. After opening remarks from both Alain and John, we'll want to hear from our audience. So we plan to take your questions for the remainder of the call after their remarks. Please be thinking about those questions. Okay, let's get started. Thank you, Alain, for speaking with us on the Free Lunch Podcast today. The floor is yours, all yours.
Thanks, Devin. It's an honor to be here and share our story. So, like you mentioned, the co-founder and CFO of FlightNow. Very high level, what FlightNow was a ride-sharing platform for small planes. On one side, you have pilot members who are looking to defray the cost of flying, and they're doing this by sharing expenses by offering the empty seats on their flights. On the other side, we had non-pilot members. We call them aviation enthusiasts. People who are interested in flying private, either for fun or they're interested in the destination that the pilot was flying to. And what we did is we built software, essentially in a web app, that made it really easy for these two parties to connect. So they would connect online, the pilot would post, and they were able to share expenses right from the app. Because of that, we were called the Uber of the skies or Uber for planes. Essentially because we applied software and new technology to tap into this huge inventory of empty seats, right? There are 25 million general aviation flight hours per year. Contrast that with commercial, there's only 5 million commercial hours of aviation. So you can see that the market, there's pilots just flying all the time with empty seats, and we wanted to tap into that. But to back up, I'll give you kind of my backstory and how I got involved. So as early as I can remember, I always had a love for flying. And I was lucky enough to be exposed to flying at a very, very young age. As my father, and this is a huge point of pride for me, not only was he a pilot, but he owned his own airline in Haiti called Pearl Airways. However, due to political turmoil in that country, we actually had to leave, so we were forced to leave the business behind and we relocated to the small and beautiful island of San Martin. So I grew up there, always, you know, wanting to fly and get my pilot's license, and deep down, always wanted to do something in this space. Really wanted to make, you know, a company in aviation. So fast forward 20 years, I found myself in Boston. At the time, I was interning as a lawyer for Carbonite. I had already graduated with my bachelor's degree in finance from Bentley University. And so I'm working full-time as a legal intern, also attending law school, and that's when the opportunity arose to actually start a startup. So needless to say, I was very, very busy, but you know, you have this feeling when you have an idea that you want to start a company with. It's really like you have this secret that you want to get out to the world. So basically, the early ideas of FlightNow started to solve our own problem. In 2009, I got my pilot's license. I was absolutely thrilled, and I was flying as much as I possibly could. But not surprisingly, flying is a very expensive hobby, right? It costs about $140 an hour. So after a couple of flights, you definitely feel it in your pocketbook. So since the beginning of general aviation, pilots have actually been solving this problem already. And what they've been doing, this goes back, you know, 60 years, 60, 70 years, is posting their flights at local airport bulletin boards. And any passerby that comes in can see that posting and might say, you know, call me, I'm flying from, you know, Miami to the Keys on Saturday. If you're interested in that flight, you know, just please reach out and we can share the expenses. So in that way, pilots were able to defray their expenses. So on the back of that, I mean, this is a practice that was, you know, just very common. And I actually did this myself. But when I met my co-founder, he had, you know, the brilliant idea to actually take that bulletin board and put it online and make it, you know, very easy for people to connect and be able to share expenses. So that's exactly what we did. We took that physical bulletin board that's, you know, present at all these local airports. We put it on the internet, allowed pilot and non-pilot members to join. We vetted the pilot certificates to make sure, you know, they are who they say they were. So that was essentially the start of FlightNow. We incorporated at the end of 2013 and launched on the spring in Boston of 2014. So the way we started was pretty simple. Like anyone who started a company, you know that you have to essentially get boots on the ground. We went to all the airports. We visited, you know, these airports. We threw lunches where we signed up pilots, explained to them about FlightNow. And within no time, we actually had pilots posting. They were posting flights. A real common one was Hampton Field. This is just outside of Boston, direct to Martha's Vineyard, right? And the shared expense for that flight came out to about $100, whereas the next available option, which is a private charter, would cost you around $1,000. So we were 10x more affordable, and the experience was just very, very easy for the non-pilot members and also for the pilot members. So pilots win because they're able to defray expenses, and you know, consumers and non-pilots win because now they have access to the world of aviation, right? This is a very exclusive club where, you know, not many people have a friend that's a pilot or are pilots themselves. And it's very expensive to become a pilot. You know, the training is very, very expensive. So we were able to open that up to a much larger segment of the public who, you know, normally could not even participate in that type of experience. So kind of to follow the progress here, we launched in Boston. On the back of a very successful launch in Boston, we applied to Y Combinator. So Y Combinator, for those that don't know, it's been called the world's most esteemed startup accelerator. The acceptance rate is extremely low. You know, they get tens of thousands of applications, and they only accept about 60 to 80 startups to join their program. And their program consists of the funding, obviously, of $120,000, and then you basically live and work in Silicon Valley for 3 months. And at the end of those 3 months, it culminates in what's called a demo day. And demo day is where each startup gets to pitch their business to the who's who of Silicon Valley, all the big investors. And it's very common for startups to actually leave demo day having raised anywhere from $1 to $2 million. So we got admitted to Y Combinator, joined their class of summer 2014, moved out to Silicon Valley, moved the whole business there, started doing flights now in the Bay Area. So flights from Palo Alto all up and down the Bay Area, even to Lake Tahoe. So by all accounts, things were going really well. Until we actually heard from pilot members that, you know, local FAA offices that they had reached out to were actually telling these pilots not to use flight now. And they just made this determination without calling us. We had no, you know, communication with the FAA on that point. But obviously, you know, starting a company is hard enough. This was devastating for us, right? So we reached out to the FAA to confirm, in fact, that, you know, this did comply. So we did that, and we actually heard back from them 3 days, coincidentally, 3 days before demo day. So we're about to pitch our company, you know, to all the big investors, and 3 days before that, we get this letter. And this letter basically says that, you know, ride-sharing in aviation is not permissible. So it essentially shut down our entire business. You know, we had to pull out of demo day, which is a big embarrassment, but we couldn't obviously pitch a company where the FAA took such a strong position like that. So that's where we were. We get home and we have this letter. Our business was thriving, and then from 1 second to the next was effectively shut down. And as the lawyer in the company, obviously my co-founders are looking at me kind of thinking, all right, what are the next steps here? So I read the letter over and over, tried to be as neutral as I possibly could, and I really thought that the letter was wrong on so many grounds. So I knew I wanted to appeal this, and that's exactly what we did. But being a newly minted lawyer myself, this was an extremely difficult thing to take on, and that's where, you know, we were so lucky to get connected with John and also the Goldwater Institute to give us that legal muscle to be able to actually appeal this and stand up for pilots' rights and just really for what's right. You know, this has been allowed in aviation for you know, decades. The only thing that's changed here is using the internet to communicate. That's the only thing that's changed. And the FAA has taken this approach. You can actually contrast that with Europe, where in Europe their regulatory body is actually expressly allowed online forums exactly like right now. So that's I think now's a good point to probably turn it over to John to talk about the appeal and how all that went. But if you have any other questions, I'm happy to address them now.
Hey, thanks, Alon. I appreciate that background very much. This is John Riches of the Goldwater Institute. Just on a personal note, I want to say what a pleasure it was and is working with Alon, who not only is the type of entrepreneur that we need in this country that comes up with products and services that move the country forward, but also a very brilliant attorney. And so working through this case with him, and seeing both of those sides really made the case much more interesting and frankly much more personally rewarding to litigate. So thanks, Alon, and thanks for your ingenuity in the entrepreneurial space. I want to start my comments on the legal side of what happened with this case with a quote that I read in TechCrunch magazine, which I think helps frame exactly what we're talking about. Uber, the world's largest taxi company, owns no vehicles. Facebook, the world's most popular media owner, creates no content. Alibaba, the most valuable retailer, has no inventory, and Airbnb, the world's largest accommodation provider, owns no real estate. Something interesting is happening. And that is certainly true, from taxis and vehicle transportation to housing to delivery opportunities to financial crowdfunding. What we're calling the sharing economy is permeating nearly every industry in the United States. And what are we really talking about when we're talking about these platforms, when we're talking about FlightNow, or when we're talking about Uber or Airbnb? We're talking about communication, and we're talking about companies that are operating as communication facilitators. The internet is perfectly matching somebody that's in need of something with somebody who's willing to offer it. And what that's doing is it's putting power in the hands of individuals, not middlemen. And whether those middlemen are government mandated or, you know, like they are, for example, with selling automobiles, and we're seeing Tesla disrupt that market, or whether those middlemen are just highly regulated. And we see that, of course, with taxis and obviously in the airline industry as well. Now, transportation is one of the more highly regulated of these industries that's being disruptive. And unfortunately, when we see disruptive technologies like FlightNow, we also see regulatory overreach. We see a knee-jerk reaction oftentimes from the regulatory state, a default no position, rather than attempt to understand exactly what's happening and to mold a regulatory framework that makes sense for our day and age. So what, as Alon described, FlightNow, what they did was what has been happening in general aviation forever. You had private pilots who would just look to defray their operating expenses, the costs of their flight, by looking for passengers. And the way they did that historically was by posting information on physical bulletin boards. FlightNow was also a bulletin board. It just happened to be online. So really nothing changed except for the means of communication. And that's important for First Amendment purposes. The Supreme Court has said time and again, the First Amendment is premised on the idea that people do not need the government's permission to engage in truthful, non-misleading speech about lawful activity. And that's exactly what we have here. We have truthful speech. I'm a pilot. I'm flying from Boston to the Cape tomorrow at 12:30 p.m., and that's lawful. Pilots can do that because they've been communicating their travel plan since the beginning of general aviation. So this sort of activity ought to be protected by the First Amendment. And when the government attempts to regulate it in the manner they did in this case, it ought to be subject to the highest level of scrutiny. And specifically, when the government is discriminating against the means of communication, saying that airport bulletin boards is okay, but internet communications are impermissible, that ought not to be subject to government regulation. And those sorts of activities ought to be highly susceptible to legal challenge. So I think on a very broad, and we have additional precedent that's come down. Citizens United has some interesting discussions about discrimination against the means of communication. Of course, Reed v. Town of Gilbert discussed content-based speech, which this would very likely be. So what we're talking about kind of very broadly is companies like Alon's, like FlightNow, where they're merely just facilitating communications. That is protected activity. It ought to be subject to the most heightened degree of judicial scrutiny. And we are hopeful that at some point the Supreme Court, unfortunately declined to hear this case, will take a case that involves some of these communication platforms and clarify that government regulation in this area should only exist in ways that don't infringe on significant First Amendment values. So that's one piece, and that's the broader piece of it. Talking a little more specifically for a couple minutes about what happened here in the specific context of aviation and transportation, the court, when we took this case, because it was an agency of the FAA, we were allowed to take this directly to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals on direct review, and they did something that was really interesting. The FAA said that FlightNow is a common carrier. So think about that. They said that These private pilots who are flying 4- and 6-seater Cessnas, you are now Delta or American Airlines because you've chosen to use the internet to communicate, which was a pretty astonishing position to take. And so when we went to the D.C. Circuit, we said that cannot possibly be the case because common carriers require two things that don't exist here. First, common carriers have to have a commercial component. The common carrier has to be able to make a profit. So if FlightNow pilots are common carriers who are not earning a profit, again, they're just defraying their expenses. So if there's a pilot and a passenger, the pilot can only share expenses up to 50%. If it's a pilot and two passengers, the pilot has to pay a pro rata share of that, so 33%. So if FlightNow pilots are truly a commercial enterprise, they would be the first commercial enterprise in the history of the world that it would never be possible to actually earn a commercial profit. So that was a problem. And it was also a problem because common carriers, they have to be able to take all people that come to them without refusal. If you go to the ticket booth at Amtrak or at Delta or American, they can't refuse you unless they have some lawful reason to do so. Of course, FlightNow pilots and passengers, importantly, they could refuse one another for any reason or for no reason at all. They're not bound by those same common carrier obligations, and we also see this on other sharing economy platforms like Uber, where the passengers have the ability to rate the drivers, and the drivers have the ability to rate the passengers, and if they don't want to accept one another, they don't have to. And for that reason, also companies like Uber are also not common carriers. So unfortunately, because of things like regulatory deference, the D.C. Circuit ruled against FlightNow. We asked for en banc review, which was denied, and the U.S. Supreme Court denied our petition for cert. Following our legal activity, we've pursued some congressional options, and we're also exploring ways to handle this on the regulatory side of things. And I'm happy to discuss where things stand along on any of those fronts. But I'll conclude before we open it up to questions with this. You know, there has always been a tension between innovation and regulation. We've seen it from the very earliest days, and Alon is fond of saying this as well. Just as the Model T, probably the most important innovation in personal transportation in the history of the world, was rolling off the assembly lines, regulators throughout the country began banning what they called horseless carriages. In the end, technology always wins. The question, of course, is how much time is wasted, how many resources are lost, how much wealth and opportunity is destroyed in the meantime. Regulators, in this case, have done all of those things, and we're hopeful that in the end of the day, technology wins out in the area of flight sharing the way it has in many other spaces in transportation and elsewhere. So thanks. With that, I'll close my remarks and open it up for questions.
Awesome. Let me pick up from here. This is Devin. Alon, John, very interesting stuff here. I have a ton of questions, but let me see whether or not our audience has questions. We've got quite a few people on the line. If not, I'm going to just launch into my questions, and hopefully you'll entertain me. Okay, so we're going to go to audience questions in a moment. Everyone on the call is going to hear a prompt indicating that the floor mode has been turned on. After that, if you'd like to request the floor to ask a question, enter star on your phone and then pound button on your phone. Okay. The floor mode is on. When we get to your request, you'll hear a prompt, and then you can ask your question. We'll answer the questions in the order in which they're received. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, just press the star button and press the pound button on your phone, and we'll get to you in order. So if I could, I just have sort of a general question about the fact that FlightNow has been dubbed Uber of the sky or flight sharing for planes. So there's sort of this connection between ride sharing on the ground and ride sharing in the air. I wonder, Alon, whether you had any reservations previously or now about going the Uber route, essentially spontaneous deregulation, just going and doing it and not asking for permission.
Yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's a great question. So a couple things. So, you know, being dubbed Uber of the skies, Uber for planes, obviously it's great to be associated with, you know, a very successful company. I think the one thing that made us, you know, very different was what John was talking about was, you know, there was no, like, for-profit happening here, right? It was just, you can think of it as carpooling, but instead airpooling. So that was one differentiator. And then, you know, going the, you know, better to ask for forgiveness, better to beg for forgiveness and ask for permission route, we thought about that. You know, we thought about just going stealth and making the service available. But there's one key difference between kind of Uber's model that they're able to do that versus, you know, what happened with FlightNow is that the FAA has regulatory authority over, you know, the entire United States, right? It's a federal federal regulatory agency that has purview. So once they make the determination, that applies to every state, which is different than Uber, which has been able to, you know, go to these different different states and kind of, you know, fight these small little fires here and there while at the same time the company is, you know, experiencing very rapid growth. That wasn't possible for us. You know, the FAA has regulatory authority over the entire United States. So if they make a determination, you're shut down everywhere. You can't operate in Florida versus California. You are completely shut down. So I hope that answers your question in terms of, you know, why we didn't pursue that strategy.
No, it certainly does. I've got a bunch more questions, but we have one question pending. So we're going to go to that caller now. Caller, when you hear prompt, you can ask your question.
Hey, this is Mike Doherty. I actually am a pilot and own a Cirrus and am a member of the Federal Society. And I'm also deeply involved in regulatory fights. So great talk so far. First comment quickly is, as a pilot, if the FAA was now blessing this, I'd be terrified about insurance coverage. Number one, I don't know if you addressed that. And also, in the D.C. Circuit, did they argue Chevron? Was Chevron deference argued? Did the court say they couldn't rule on this because the FAA had any deferential powers under Chevron? Because I'm curious as to how the First Amendment, you know, this consent, this really sounds like they're not even getting the First Amendment legal argument and just bowing to the agency.
Yeah, I'll take go ahead, Alon.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly that. So I'll address the insurance side of it, and then I guess John, you can speak to the legal questions. So first of all, awesome to have a pilot on. So yeah, really nothing you know really changed in the whole calculus, right? If you're as a pilot, you know, you obviously own your aircraft, but you know, as a renter myself, I have to have renter's insurance. You know, every school or anywhere you rent from requires that. So really, nothing was being changed there.
I would just be afraid they deny the claim. If you had a claim, and the FAA is saying you're operating as a commercial entity or a common carrier, you know, the insurance carrier is going to say, "Oh, sorry, you lose. No, we're not covering this. Not in your contract." So that was just my. That's where I was going.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if the FAA takes, you know, that line of argument, then certainly it would not help on the insurance side, that's for sure. And the other thing is that, you know, we weren't packaging this as you know, a transportation service, right? We were packaging this as exactly what it is, which is pilots flying for fun, wanting to meet people to be able to share expenses. Made it very clear that the pilot can refuse to fly at any time. So there's no guarantee that, you know, we're taking you from A to B or anything like that. It really was about the flying experience. And, you know, our initial members, I just got an email the other day. One of our first non-pilot members who took a flight is actually now working towards his pilot license. I just loved the experience, and after that, he was hooked.
John, did you have something to say about this?
Yeah, I'll jump in on the two legal questions. So the D.C. Circuit said that it's going to apply our deference, but then it said it didn't even need deference on this one. We thought that was inappropriate for one primary reason. Our deference is, of course, an agency's interpretation of its own regulations. But in this case, we argued that the agency's definition of common carrier conflicted with the common law and the D.C. Circuit's definition of common carrier. The court tried to bob and weave out of that because they would have been forced to confront this issue that FlightNow pilots are not commercial operators and they don't hold out generally to the public. And the facts were just simply too strong on those points. So the court argued that was not raised in the opening brief and therefore waived, although it clearly was. And then it was also addressed in the response. And so we picked up a stronger line of argument along those lines in the reply. So essentially the court tried to squeeze out of its obligation to confront the fact that the FAA's definition was in conflict with the common law and therefore no deference should have been afforded. On the First Amendment question, the court did not apply. It's really unclear in the opinion what level of scrutiny the court applied on First Amendment grounds, although it did reach the First Amendment issue. And the court basically just said, well, this is a legal activity because you need what's called, a Part 119 license to operate these flights, and therefore First Amendment protections don't apply. So that's the way they dealt with that, which we felt was incorrect.
Well, thanks for the question, and thanks a lot, John and Alon, for your responses there. I still have a bunch of questions. We've got one question queued up as well, but I'd like to make an announcement before we get to the next question. I'll repeat, however, for anyone else who's interested in asking a question, that you can enter star and then pound on your telephone keypad, and you'll be queued up, and we'll get to your question in the order that we receive it. But in terms of my announcement, the next two Free Lunch podcast calls will take place next week, one on Tuesday and the other on Wednesday. The Tuesday podcast call will center on LabMD versus the Federal Trade Commission, and the Wednesday podcast will cover quote-unquote regulatory dark matter. Both will begin at noon. Mark your calendars right now. You don't want to miss these. Again, Tuesday we'll have a podcast call on LabMD versus the Federal Trade Commission, and the Wednesday podcast will cover quote-unquote regulatory dark matter. Okay. Let me get to the next call. If you want to ask a question, just enter star and then the pound button. Caller, when you hear the prompt, you may ask your question.
Hi, this is Alexis Kramer from Bloomberg VNA. What are you doing on the legislative front to have flight sharing legalized, and what are the prospects of that legislation going through?
I'll go ahead and speak to that one. We've been working with a few different offices, but the one thing we're looking at right now is an opportunity to have the GAO look at this issue and examine some of the justifications the FAA has put forward. And that bill is being run by Congressman Sanford's office to have an independent agency address some of the objections that the agency raised, and then at that point the Congress can take up the issue again and more clearly define what common carrier is and what it is not. We will also continue to try to work with individual members to address the underlying question of common carriage, no new updates on that front, but ultimately we'd like to see legislation that defines that this sort of activity and activity like it doesn't amount to common carriage.
And you mentioned a few different offices. Which other congressmen have you been talking to on this issue?
Congressman Sanford primarily, and we're going to attempt to reach out to some others. We originally started with Congressman Schweikert, and now Congressman Sanford's office has taken it up, and we'll be reaching out to other offices as well.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, caller. I hope that answers your question, and thank you for the follow-up question. Again, if anyone wants to ask a question who's on the call, just enter star and then the pound button on your telephone keypad and you'll get queued up. I have a question, if I might. This sort of plays off of what you just said, John, and that is, what sort of were the – well, let me ask very specifically. Was one of the concerns of the FAA safety? I mean, we hear often that one of the reasons that we need XYZ regulation or policy or rule is because consumers are going to be unsafe in some way. Was that a concern of the FAA at all, that these private pilots were going to be operating an unsafe way?
Yeah, that's a great question. If it was, they didn't articulate it, and even if they had articulated it, there's problems with that. The first is that pilots share expenses right now, as we know, and it's been going on since the beginning of general aviation, and the way they do it is they communicate it on airport bulletin boards. So if safety was an issue, then whatever regulatory framework currently exists for that should address the safety concerns, because this is the very same activity that is already going on. And second, and this is interesting, the FAA didn't say that you needed a higher pilot certification. They didn't say, for example, that flight now pilots that were also pilots of airlines, they're the only ones that could fly on flight now. What they said is you needed a particular type of certificate that only attaches to for-profit commercial operations. This Part 119 certificate. So what that means in practice is, under the FAA's interpretation, it doesn't matter how much training you had as a pilot. It doesn't matter how safe you were. Literally, Neil Armstrong or Captain Sully could not use flight now to communicate their travel plans because they couldn't and they wouldn't obtain the certification the FAA said was necessary. So safety could not possibly have been the justification for that, for this action. And if it was, it just simply doesn't make any sense based on the regulatory action that was taken.
Wow, that's incredible. Captain Sully would not be able to do this. That's an astounding thing. We've got one question queued up. Again, anyone who's on the call, a couple people have joined since we started Q&A. If you'd like to ask a question of either Alon or John, just hit the star button and then the pound button. I'm going to make one more announcement before I take the next question, but be thinking about your questions. The next announcement that I have for the Regulatory Transparency Project is that for those of you who have subscribed at regproject.org for exclusive updates, immediately following this call, you're going to receive an email with a link to the RTP's fourth branch video series teaser trailer before it's shared publicly tomorrow. You're going to get it first. If you're not yet subscribed, go to regproject.org, regproject.org, and do so before the end of this call, and you'll get this exclusive material before anyone else sees it, and we hope you enjoy it. So I'm going to go to our next call now. Caller, after you hear the prompt, you can ask your question.
Oh, hi. This is Lou Smith. I'm a Federalist member, and I don't have a question. It's more of a comment. I find this to be an unconstitutional overstepping of administrative bounds, and I can't believe that the court dropped the ball on this issue either. This is separation of powers gone amok, and just what Donald Trump was talking about doing away with some of these stupid regulations that are causing people just like Alan to suffer a financial loss because of stupid regulations. And I think that was all I had to comment about.
Yeah, I'll give a follow-up comment on that. It is a problem when you think about it. I mean, here you have an unelected agency that on its own, without any authority from Congress, issues a letter that effectively shuts down general aviation flight sharing throughout the entire country. And as Alon said, we're talking about a space where there's more of these hours than there are in commercial aviation. And they do this by the stroke of a pen, and they're then unaccountable. And more troublingly, when that action is challenged in court, as the first caller or the second caller identified, courts are then obligated to defer to the agency's legal interpretations. So it almost immunizes entirely this type of regulatory action. And hopefully the new composition of the U.S. Supreme Court is going to be willing to take up this issue of regulatory deference so that when agency decisions come to it, they'll actually be subject to meaningful judicial review rather than just rubber stamps by the courts.
Yeah, I think I'll just make one follow-up. I think that was probably one of the most painful parts of this whole thing for me. You know, being a lawyer myself, I really believe in, being equal before the law. And, when we finally reached the appeals court, it was almost as if, we couldn't even make our arguments. Like, the court would not even look at the main things that would completely vindicate our position, right? So that was definitely the most troubling part for me.
Thanks, caller. Thanks, Alon. Thanks, John. I think this is, if I could just say one thing, this is really, and it's a new project, really what the Regulatory Transparency Project is about, sort of going off of what the caller just mentioned. What we're trying to do is to identify and raise awareness of sort of the greatest regulatory excesses in the country at all levels of government. It's unfortunate that a lot of people don't know about these things, and I think if they did, they may be just as upset as our caller and be concerned about sort of where the country is going in terms of its regulatory framework and how it might be harming innovators, entrepreneurs, and the American dream. I'm going to make one last call for questions before I allow or ask, anyway, Alon and John to make any final comments that they may want to make. We're going to be coming to the end of our call here. If you have any questions for John or Alon about FlightNow, about FAA, about Goldwater Institute, et cetera, press the star button and then the pound button on your telephone keypad. This is going to be the last call for questions. If I could ask one question before, it looks like we have one question queued up. If I could ask one question before we go to that question, please humor me, Alon. You mentioned that your company was up and running. What was the demand like? For many, many years, many generations, there was sort of this bulletin board that was at small airports where people could find out whether or not they could share rides with folks. But then you came along and your co-founder of FlightNow came along. Did demand really tick up for flight sharing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We had, I think in one day we had like 10,000 signups just in one day. And then it just continued after that. I mean, we had tens of thousands of signups. People, were so excited to be able to, meet a pilot and go flying, take to the skies. I mentioned earlier, it's a very exclusive club, right? You either have to be a pilot or know a pilot. So by putting this online and giving access to other people to be able to connect with pilots and then sharing that experience at a very affordable price, it was a win-win for both people, right? Pilots get to defray and they get to take on that experience. And we saw time and again, people just get so passionate about aviation. And then, like I said earlier, we had, one person actually go and pursue their pilot's license, right? That's great. That's especially great right now since, there are not many people becoming pilots right now. General aviation has definitely been dying over the past two decades, and that's because of the cost of getting into it.
Thanks, Alon. I'm going to take this or field this last question, and then hopefully John and Alon, you'll have some final remarks for our listeners, and then we'll close the call out. Once you hear the prompt, you may ask your question, caller.
David Emerson, Federal Society member here in Berkeley, California, and also have done a lot of flying private as well. And so I had one question and a couple of comments. One is you mentioned something about First Amendment, and I'm trying to understand what the legs of that argument might be because this, it seems to be, would come under the sort of general umbrella of commercial speech where the relevant test is intermediate scrutiny and the challenge law must, further an important government interest by means that are substantially related to that interest. And you know, that's kind of a lot of words, but it's certainly a far lower standard than would be applied to private speech. So that was kind of the question. And the comment has to do with a couple of things. One is that, you know, the Uber experience, at least that I've seen out here in the San Francisco area, is that local communities might object to Uber at first, but once they find a way to turn it into a revenue-making opportunity, those regulatory objections tend to fall away, which, you know, perhaps disguises the true intent of the system. And the FAA doesn't have any apparent way to generate a revenue stream from this, so perhaps that's a telling difference. And the other comment has to do with just the for-profit nature that the FAA is alleging for the service, and whether or not you explored, you know, making an affirmative representation by the pilot that they were not doing this for profit, and that it was, in fact, if anything, just to limit their losses or share their expenses, but it in no ways was a for-profit making enterprise.
Thanks for the question, and my sympathies to you for being a Federalist Society member in Berkeley. That must be a difficult going at things. On your First Amendment questions, a couple comments. You know, it's not commercial speech because the pilots are not earning a commercial profit. But in any event, those distinctions hopefully will find their way out of First Amendment jurisprudence. Speech is speech. And in fact, Reed v. Town of Gilbert, which the U.S. Supreme Court decided while our litigation was ongoing, and in fact, we supplemented our briefing with that decision, said very, very clearly that speech regulation is content-based and therefore subject to strict scrutiny rather than intermediate scrutiny if it applies to speech because of the topic discussed or the message expressed. And in this case, the FAA was regulating speech because of the topic discussed, pilot's flight plans, and the message that was expressed. So as a result, it was content-based. It ought to have been subject to strict scrutiny. If speech or if a government activity is subject to strict scrutiny, it is presumptively unconstitutional. The only compelling government interest that the FAA could have possibly advanced was air transportation safety, and for the reasons I had mentioned earlier, the regulatory requirement didn't advance safety. That government justification was not sufficient, and the FAA's action was therefore unconstitutional.
Thank you, caller, and thank you very much, John. I think at this point we're going to go ahead and take final remarks from either of you or both of you, if you have any. John, since you just answered that question, Alon, would you like to make any final remarks?
Sure. First of all, I just want to say thank you for being able to share this story. Obviously, it's, you know, very personal for us. I'm really happy to be able to share experience. And I'm happy that people are finding it interesting and actually want to change the things that ended up shutting us down. As an entrepreneur, I believe that innovation will win out in the end. Right? We're always going to find a way to make it work and succeed. So I think it's really time that regulators and, you know, forward-thinking companies can come together and arrive at the best solutions for everyone. I also believe that persistence is, you know, the strongest force in the world, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're persisting, and this will be ride-sharing innovation will exist. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, and definitely me too to all of those things, Lon. And for all the callers, I think it's important to ask why does this matter? Why is this case that involves general aviation? Why does it matter to the rest of us? And I think it does because we've all lost something as a result of what this administrative agency did in this case. I don't know the exact numbers, but if you took a flight from Boston, to the Cape or to wherever, Martha's Vineyard, on flight now, it would be something like $100. If you took that same flight on a commercial charter airplane, it would be 10 times that amount. And because of what the FAA did, they foreclosed that avenue to all of us. They foreclosed the ability of us to have this new and innovative way to get from point A to point B to the entire country. And as Alon said, fortunately, in the end, innovation and technology always does win out. We hope that that will also be the case here.
Thanks, guys, for those final thoughts. If I could just give one final thought as well, and about the Regulatory Transparency Project, I'd say, sort of in the same vein, that the overarching goal of the RTP is to inject into the public dialogue due treatment of not just the benefits, but also the burdens of government regulation. A burden now that Alon and his co-founder, FlightNow, have felt quite concentrated, but oftentimes are diffuse and are not seen in any other way besides the increased cost of goods and services. But many of these burdens are also simply stifling of innovation, slowing of economic productivity, and foreclosing opportunity, oftentimes for the most vulnerable among us. And so that's why the RTP exists. That's why the Free Lunch Podcast is a part of that. And we thank Alan and the audience and John for joining us today for this installment of the Free Lunch Podcast. We welcome any of your feedback by email at hello@regproject.org. That's hello@regproject.org. We hope that you'll go to our website at regproject.org, subscribe, follow us on our social media pages, and also hope to see you all again next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, for our next two installments of Free Lunch. See you then, and so long.
On behalf of the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to Free Lunch. As always, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play to get new episodes of Free Lunch when they're published. Also, visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org. There, we regularly upload content in addition to our podcasts, such as short videos and papers. And you can join the discussion by sharing your story of how regulation has personally affected you. Until next time, remember, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.